show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it, nerd.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 361 and the 10-year anniversary episode. I'm your host, John X. Thanks for joining me. Glad to have you back once again. And it is just me. We're going solo. We're doing a mailbag episode. I reached out to former guests. Guests? Nice. We're starting off on a strong note. Again, solo episodes, I don't edit. But I reached out to former guests, and I said, hey, ask me any question you want, and they did not disappoint. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do 10 questions here today on this episode, and then 2 days later, I'm answering 10 more questions on the blog, because I like writing just as much as I like podcasting. And let's face it, after 10 fucking years of doing this show can be anything I want it to be. It is what I say it is. Because this show has done for me exactly what I hoped it would do, which is essentially infer credibility on me that allows me to podcast professionally. And I have done that. I've been misstating this at the end of episodes, but I'm currently working on 6 shows. I have a couple other in the pipeline, some that are dormant, some that may come back, but that's the nature. These things are not designed to last forever. Yet here I sit, more than 400 total episodes later, and 10 years later, and I'm going, maybe it does. I don't know. This is a show I have now done longer than I have done anything else. Literally, anything professionally or creatively under this banner. Here we go. Perfect. You're welcome. Your ears are grateful for that. I have done this for longer than I have done anything else, and that is amazing to me. And here's the thing. I can't quit it. I've tried to walk away from this show so many times, but I come back to it because there's something at the core of just getting to sit down with someone, have a great conversation, learn about them, and do it in a really targeted and directed way. I can't seem to get enough of it because every time I think about leaving, I'm like, no, you know what? I like having this format because I'm curious about people. I like asking them questions. I like doing the thing. I love the process. And if you listen to any stand-up comedian, even Jerry Seinfeld, right? Jerry Seinfeld has fucking billions of dollars probably at this point. He's got to be at least in the 9-figure club. Yet he's still getting up in front of a bunch of drunks and going, okay, I'm going to make you laugh because he likes the process. I just like this process. I love doing it, so I keep doing it. So fuck it. Here we are. 10 years later. Now, 10 guests here. And I'm going to put in the show notes the guest, the question, and the time they asked it. So, with that in mind, I didn't put any parameters on this. I said, ask me any question you want. I don't care what it is. I will answer it, and I have every flavor in here. So, we're going to go through these 10, and it's going to be great, great fun. You ready? I'm ready. Let's fucking do this. Also, I have a Coors next to me because I'm from Golden. And if we're not celebrating, then what the fuck are we doing here? Right? So you may hear me take a few slugs of beer, like right now. Alrighty, Roo. Okay, that's good stuff. Golden, Colorado, recognize. First question comes from Josh Penry, episode 279. And he is a political consultant. We talked about the future of the Republican Party. I don't think it's gone the way he might have hoped it's been going. I don't know that for sure. I haven't followed up with him in this specific line of questioning. But it was after the January 6th insurrection. Republicans have seemed to maintain this path under Donald Trump. I'd be interested in how Josh feels about that. Remind me to follow up with him. But here's his question. By my recollection, you were podcasting before podcasting was cool. Ah, thanks, Josh. I am a fucking hipster. And you've just underlined perfectly for everyone. This is a two-part question. Number one, did you ever in your wildest dreams believe that podcasting would become a dominant communications medium? Two, in your opinion, would podcasting have become a dominant medium in a world where SARS-CoV-2 wasn't, in parentheses, likely, released from a lab in Wuhan? Now, it's funny. I hadn't heard the lab leak theory much because I haven't been following up on this, but according to the House Oversight Committee and investigative reporters from the New York Times, that is probably likely where it came from. That's crazy to me. That's a piece of info that's fairly new to me, but I think I'm trying to put as much COVID out of my head. Let's get back to this question. Did I believe podcasting would become a dominant communications medium? That answer is no, because I never gave a shit. Like, that kind of thing is of basically no interest to me. Empire building, accumulating power, rising up in prominence and notoriety. I don't give a fuck about any of that. So the fact that podcasting has become like a whole thing and allowed me to create a cottage industry out of it, I fucking love that shit. That is fantastic. That is nice for me professionally, because now there's a market for people with services and talents like mine. So no, I didn't anticipate this. No, I never aspired for that to happen, at least not actively. I'm always sort of just doing what I like. And if it becomes like a bigger thing after that, great. If not, whatever, I'm probably going to be doing it anyway. It reminds me of a piece of advice that Kyle Kinane gives aspiring comics. He said, you have to be willing to do what you love for free forever. And if success comes, then great. But if you love something, you got to be willing to do it for free forever. This show has always been free. I've never gotten paid for this show. I have one sponsor in 4 Degrees. Let's give them a shout right now. But beyond that, no, I've never sought to monetize this because I don't care. Second part of that question, would podcasting have become a dominant medium in a world where COVID didn't overtake the world, which is essentially the heart of that question? You know, it's a fair question, because if COVID was good for one thing, it was good for this show, because all of a sudden, everyone was bored and available. So my shows in 2020 were fucking killer. I loved those shows. Those shows were fantastic. Just sitting here on Zoom talking to all these great people that I never had cause to really talk to before. And they're all like, yeah, I'm available. Sure. What the fuck else am I doing? Am I going to watch another episode of Bar Rescue? Am I going to watch The Office for the 84th time? No, fuck, I'll talk to this guy. So in terms of COVID, this show was great. And I'm positive that I was not the only one who realized that. And that's probably helped with an inflection point. Like, if you look at podcasting, I imagine that inflection point is sometime in 2020 where it really went into the stratosphere. But it's funny, everyone says I was podcasting before it was cool. This show launched in 2014. I had already been listening to podcasts for 5 years at that point. Christ, I am a hipster. Jesus, God. But literally, I didn't feel that new at that point. But now that every Tom, Dick, and Quasimodo out there has a podcast, yeah, okay, I get it. Makes sense to me. But thanks for your question, Josh. Enormously helpful. Let's go to second question. This one comes from Kathy Walker, who's the news director at KOA. I have guested on KOA a few times now, and I really love it down there. Kathy is just an absolute ray of sunshine. She's a consummate pro. She's terrific at what she does, and I love the folks that I work with at iHeart. So sometimes I'm a guest voice on Punk Tacos. Occasionally, I'm filling in on KOA. Here's Kathy's question. What are your views on the lane for podcasts? Can it be a great tool in community to gather and share information? I think absolutely it can. When I do this professionally, I always tell people this. They're like, oh, you're a professional podcaster? That's so cool. And I'm like, it's not quite as cool as you think it is, because I'm not working on iTunes top 100 shows. I'm doing like ditch digging type work, sort of, at least in terms of the eyes of the average person. I fucking love this shit. I love what I do. I love the shows that I work on, but they're not for everyone. Because sometimes we're talking about workforce development, or we're talking about esoteric policy issues like, should we repeal the Gallagher Amendment? What are we going to do about property taxes? This kind of stuff makes people's eyes glaze over when I talk to them about it. But what I tell them, and what I tell the people who work for the organizations on the shows that I produce, you are not going for quantity of audience. You are going for quality of audience. You have a very specific group of people, and this podcast fulfills a very specific niche that you need to fill. It should be part of a suite of an overall communications portfolio. This is all very like in the weeds kind of PR shit, so I apologize for the dorky language, but it's true. Podcasts can be any number of things. There are some I listen to just for fun, and that's very few and far between because this is my professional life, but one is the Growlix Saves the World. That show is just pure joy for me because those three dudes, Andrew Orvidal, Adam Caton Holland, and Ben Roy, who appears later in this mailbag, they all clearly love each other and they love to make each other laugh. That is joy that you can just tap into and enjoy as like a voyeur. It's terrific. But there are shows like CityCast Denver that are like, hey, Denver, what's on your mind? Let's talk about these things. Let's dig in. Let's get someone who knows something about this and get them on the show. I love that show. And I love that podcasts can be anything. Everything from let's analyze this policy and how it's going to impact Coloradans to just pure joy and laughter to something like Chris DeMakes a podcast where it's like, hey, do you have a favorite song? Chris is going to talk to the creator of that song and dig into how it was made. Shit, that's like pure catnip for me, bro. I love that. And then there's great shows like CityCast where they're serving a vital function for the city. They're filling in a gap for the news media that may not have existed before. And I love what Bree, Paul, Peyton, and the whole team are doing there. CityCast is a delight. So Kathy, yes, podcasts can be any number of things. And in this particular case, they can be a great tool in a community to gather and share information. Now then, while we are on the subject of CityCast Denver, let's go to our third question. This is Bree Davies. She was my guest on episode 93. She says, ooh, this is good. I love this question. What is the old Denver restaurant you would want, you would bring back to have your favorite meal at one more time? What is that meal? And if you could bring back an old Denver restaurant or bar because it was your favorite atmosphere slash vibe, what would it be? First question first. Okay, so I love old Denver. And I feel fortunate that I live on this side of town that I get to go to Bull and Bush a lot. My kids love it there. My wife and I love it there. It's affordably priced. The service is always impeccable. And plus, you get like French onion soup or green chili in one of those like cast iron little crocks. And my God, that's great. But the question at hand was, what is the old Denver restaurant you would bring back? My answer, it's out in Lakewood. It's on West Colfax, just west of Kipling. It's Dino's Italian Restaurant. Love Dino's. And Dino's had incredible food. The bread there was outrageously good. I would dip that in a little red sauce. And that was just like a piece of heaven that you could eat. I would probably get something that I don't get like anywhere else. I don't go out for like red sauce Italian all that frequently. But at Dino's, here's what I would get. I would get like manicotti, which you don't see manicotti around all that much. I would get maybe manicotti, or I would get a piece of their lasagna, which was really, really good. They had a very sort of, that's what I'm looking for here, like a concise or discreet house salad with just Italian dressing that was just always impeccably done. Dino's had a very welcoming atmosphere. It felt like an institution. It felt like home, dude. Like Dino's was just, oh God, it was the best. I love Dino's and I miss Dino's. I get why they didn't do it anymore, but you know, it sucks. I hate when places like that go away. In terms of bars, just because of the atmosphere, this is more indicative of a time in my life that is gone and not likely coming back. And I think it's called Oso now, but it was the old Ogden Street South. I love the Ogden Street South. And I didn't even do karaoke. I heard it was just an ace karaoke joint. But I used to go there. My wife and I lived like two blocks from there, or a few blocks from there. I had an apartment that was on like Bayard and Clarkson. So that's like two blocks from Ogden. On the other end of the block was this Country Club Liquors place, where the guy who owned it was this guy named Michael, who I struck up a friendship with. I always end up talking to liquor store clerks. It's like them and Uber drivers who I always talk to. But anyway, the Ogden Street South, we used to sit on the patio just like on a lazy Saturday or lazy Sunday. We'd drink beers, smoke cigarettes, and chat with each other. And that was just absolutely phenomenal. Thinking about being in your 20s on a warm Denver day, drinking a cold beer with a cigarette and your favorite person, fuck, man. That's pure catnip. That's just something that brings me right back. So I would love to go back to the dive bar of the Ogden Street South, hang out there, smoke some cigarettes, and then, you know what, maybe drive out to Lakewood, have some manicotti at Dino's. Perfect. Thank you for the question, Bree. I loved that one. All righty, Rue, let's go on to number four. Fourth question we've got from comedian Christy Buckley, who's also the joke mentor. I had her on KOA, and she was absolutely phenomenal. She crushed it. She hit it out of the park. And of all the segments I did this last stretch I was on KOA, I got the most compliments for my conversation with her because we talked about all things humor. She's incredibly insightful and she's fucking hilarious. So here's her question. She was episode 268, by the way. What's your go-to karaoke song? All right, so quick aside here. I've done karaoke exactly one time in my life. It was in London, England. I was visiting my friend Krista out there, and everyone was doing karaoke. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm across an ocean. I'm not a good singer, by the way. And I go, you know what? I'm here. This is the time and place to do karaoke. So I did a really shitty rendition of All the Small Things by Blink-182. Which I'm happy only one person who is still in my life ever saw. And she'll tell you it wasn't as bad as I remember. Fuck that. I have the memory of it. It sounds awful in my head. Especially compared to how everyone else did. There were these two drunk Swedish guys who sang The Rose by Bette Midler, which was one of my favorite experiences ever. Just drunk up there. I don't know if they were gay or just very, very sensitive, but they clearly had deep affection for each other. Now, what is my go-to karaoke song? Let's say I were to do this again. Because I'm not a good singer and because I have no shame anymore, I'm a dad, so shame is something that I don't concern myself with pretty much ever. I think I got to go with the Cowardly Lion song from The Wizard of Oz, right? I think that would just be perfect. So you just get up there and everyone's like, okay, what's coming? And you go, I were king of the forest. Not queen, not duke, not prince, na-na-na-na. My regal robes of the forest would be a satin, not a cotton, not chintz. Do you imagine doing that in a crowd full of drunks? How fucking phenomenal would that night be? Everyone's like, this dude got up there and sang the Cowardly Lion song from The Wizard of Oz. I love the idea of that. So, I don't know if that's in anyone's karaoke book. I could probably do it from memory, but that's my answer. So, Christy, amazing question. I may have to do that for real now. All right, let's move on. Here's number five. So, this one comes from Tom Bryan. He is the author of The Number Ones, one of my favorite books from the last couple of years, and one of my favorite music writers and just pop culture writers, full stop, of anyone, anywhere. He asked me that he was episode 344 and 253. What's your worst mosh pit injury? Yeah. Now we're talking real shit, right? So mosh pits are not nearly as violent as they used to be. When I was going in mosh pits regularly 20 years ago, they were pretty frightening places. If you were ever at a Slipknot show, they'd do the Wall of Death, which was just a way for aggro dickheads to hurt each other. Sometimes there would be people in there who were like pit monsters, and you could tell they were in the scene for the wrong reason. But I was never injured by any of them. I mean, a few, like I remember I got burned by a cigarette one time. That really sucked. You know, you've had your foot stepped on, you've caught a few in the face. My worst injury came at the Starlight Theater in Fort Collins. And I can't even remember who we were seeing, but we're in the pit, we're bouncing around. My big, goofy roommate Clayton, who's taller than I am, and just really uncoordinated. He's an engineer. He's hopping around, and he throws his elbow back right as I'm jumping up into it. So imagine that. I'm on the rise, and his elbow's coming back, and it catches me right in the eye socket. So hard. And I remember it was one of those things where it's like you can hear color, you know, or you can see sound. Like you become a synesthete where you go, holy fuck, my brain isn't right. But he caught me so hard in the eye socket with his elbow that I had to sit out for a while. And then, thankfully, I didn't have much damage from it or anything. But I was icing it for a long time. That really sucked. It kind of ruined my enjoyment of the rest of that show. But that, thankfully, no terrible, terrible mosh pit injuries. That one really hurt. That one was unpleasant. But, so, worst mosh pit injury, that's it. Oakley Dokley, number six. Let's go to my wife, who was episode 200. That was a fun one. She says, of the podcasts you have been on as a guest, which has been your favorite? And God damn it, here's what pisses me off about my wife. She is so much better at this shit than I am. She named the show. She writes me good questions. She like, she's so effortless in thinking about this. I think that's probably just a byproduct of us knowing each other really well. But she goes, of the shows you've been on, I'm like, damn, no one ever asks me that. What a great question, because I love guesting on shows. Guesting on shows is really, really fun. Sometimes it sucks, you know, if the host is no good, or if you're getting really banal, sort of samey questions. But as I thought about this, my answer is, did that age well with Molly Smith? That show is just a pure joy, a pure delight. We hit it off amazingly. We actually got together in real life. So it was me, my wife, Molly, and Jeff Morton, who hosts the Gen X show and the CSG podcast, where the four of us got together and just laughed and had a great time. Molly understands movies in a way that is very similar to the way that I understand and enjoy movies. So I heard her do a podcast about White Men Can't Jump. And I remember being like, dude, this movie came out before you were born and you fucking get it immediately. You get what its vibe is. You get what it's aspiring to be. You get what it's trying to do. And you're judging it on those merits, not from some like detached, above it all kind of persona that like a lot of younger people tend to fall into, where it's like, oh, this came out before I was born. This is so old and this is shitty, or like the sensibilities all, fuck that. Okay. Judge it by what it's trying to do and in its time and place. That's why her show is called Did That Age Well? So the norms and the mores may have changed from the time it was made, but sometimes it may have improved. So we've done three episodes, and I realize they're all about workplaces. We did Office Space, we did Empire Records, and we did the shitty erotic thriller Disclosure with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore. That one may have been my favorite one to do, though, like truthfully, because that movie was just such a colossal misfire on so many fronts that it was really fun to rip apart. So that's my favorite one to do. I will go do that show anytime she asks me to be on it. So thanks, babe. I love you. Good question. Time for number seven. Let's move right along. Vic Lombardi. He was my guest on the ninth anniversary episode of this show, episode 346. And he asks a fairly pointed question here. Why do so many young people hate wealthy older people? What happened to revering success? I like this question because as someone who is no longer younger or, you know, aspiring for wealth, I think Vic is doing quite well for himself. I think he's doing fine. I don't know his financial situation. I don't care to know. It doesn't really matter. But I know as a child of immigrants, Vic has told me many times, he's like, my parents worked really hard to assimilate, and they worked hard, and they wanted to be contributing members of society, and they wanted to do all of these things, and they worked really hard, and they got there. And I agree with him. I think that is extremely true. I think that model that Vic's parents had and that Vic saw growing up doesn't exist as much as it used to, because the consolidation of wealth in this country has closed a lot of doors for ascension for young people, where the American dream feels like a total abstraction to a large portion of the younger populace. They look at what's above them, and you look at people who are billionaires, and you look at the insane private equity and venture capital kind of model that we have now, where wealth continues to get consolidated, and they continue to strip away rights, privileges, and opportunities. If you think about something like Uber, which basically disrupted taxi cabs, what Uber did was be like, oh, so you know taxis? Well, we're going to do that, but basically we're going to take away all the worker protections, and we're going to take away all the worker rights, and we're going to strip down this model to its bare bones so that everyone who is doing it is making fucking peanuts and can't make rent. That's not only true with like rideshare, but a lot of industries. A lot of the so-called disruptors show up and they go, hey, remember all those like lifestyle things that you enjoyed, like all those worker protections, a livable wage where you could work one job and get a house and you could go to college. Like you hear boomers always talk about going to college in like the 70s. It's like, yeah, I worked minimum wage and paid for college the whole way through. And you go, no one can fucking do that anymore. Right? So when you see wealthy people, and you see wealthy people who are talking down to younger people, that no longer becomes aspirational. That becomes adversarial, right? You look at people who have it all, and they're just condescending to young people. Why don't you just work hard? It's like, motherfucker, the world is not the same now as it was then. Okay? And you are either willfully ignorant of that or just willfully ignoring it and castigating young people anyway. So, Vic, I think that's why younger people are generally more pissed off at the wealthy, because so much more wealth is consolidated and so many of the opportunities are not as robust as they once were. Industries ain't the same. And it's hard when you're in a world where you're rewarding people who do nothing but sniff wealth and aspire to wealth without creating any value. You think about what hedge funds and private equity have done to the news industry and how abhorrent that is. You look at that and it's hard not to be pissed off. I think most people want to achieve success. They want to achieve a comfortable standard of living, but it feels out of reach for many people. And that's my working theory. I could be way off here. I'm not an economist. I'm not a politician. I'm not a policymaker. I just see what I see. And this is me synthesizing a lot into a very, very short, like 4-minute answer. So what I'll tell you is, I don't think it's directed at any individual, like any individual sort of wealthy person. I think it's at a system that feels increasingly rigged against them. So anyway, Vic, always very thoughtful, someone I adore. Thanks for the question. Number 8, we've got Peaches and Diesel, my workout buddy from Orange Theory. That's right. She has something like 350,000 Instagram followers, and well-deserved, because her shit is hilarious. I mean, every one of her videos is one that I just find really funny. She's very, like, it's very well curated, and her sensibility is just terrific. Here's her question. What's your personal slogan or motto? And I have a couple of these. One, I've said on the show a bunch. It's work hard and be nice to people, but that's not going to be my answer here. Although that is true. I mean, sort of bridging off Vic's question, you can get part of the way there. I've had many, many advantages. I've had a lot of help to get where I am. But there comes a point where you have to sort of carry this on your own, and working hard and being nice to people is a big component of that. But here's my real answer. My real answer is, make bold choices and the world will tend to reward you for them. That is my personal motto. Make bold choices and the world will tend to reward you for them. When you teach public speaking, as I do, and I'm getting ready to launch a new training program for a client here, I'm re-engaging with them, I'm training a whole new crop of people. The one thing, if you boil down the one thing that every single person is sitting in the audience thinking when a speaker comes up there, it's this: God, I hope this doesn't suck. That's it. That's literally all they're thinking. Because speakers are always nervous, or they should be. If you're nervous, it means you want to do a good job. If you're not nervous, you probably don't care enough, and this thing might suck. But speaker and audience have the same goal. God, please don't let this suck, okay? Like, I'm going to have to listen to this motherfucker up there for however long they're going to be up there. If it doesn't suck, I'll give it a shot. If it does, boy, it's going to be a walk uphill for me to care about this. So I tell people, when you go up and you speak, make bold choices. The audience will be grateful to you. That is true in the world, too. Think about the people we love. They don't tend to be, you know, wilting daisies. They don't tend to be, you know, off to the side or unsure of themselves. They have intentionally made bold choices that make the world a more fun place. I always say the world doesn't have enough fucking whimsy in it. And so all of my social feeds are sort of dedicated to that now. Just what makes me laugh? What brings me joy? Let's put that shit out into the world. So make these bold choices. The universe will reward you for them. Just as you do, Peaches. My God, your Instagram feed is one of the purest joys in my entire social media life. So keep it up. Thank you for the question. Thank you for being on the show. All right, number 9. I've got Alan Brooks, who has been on this show 3 times. Episodes 254, 241, and 140. And he says, what's one thing you would change in the past, either your past or in history, and why? And if you wouldn't change anything, also why? So he's taking away that outlet. He's taking off that taking out that off ramp for me, which I also like, because my default answer is it's hard to think about changing anything because all of the choices, good and bad, that you've made in your life have led you to where you are. And if you are happy with who you are, which I am generally, I hesitate to change those because there are times where I'm like, did I stay in this relationship too long? I probably should have broken up here, you know, like whatever. But that becomes a sliding doors moment in your life, which that movie is brilliant. And I don't even particularly care for Gwyneth Paltrow, but that movie is brilliant because the whole frame of the understanding of the movie is if she had made this train or if she had missed this train, splintered her life into two very distinct directions. And I think, had this happened and not this happened, I'm sort of curious about what the other branch might look like. But ultimately, I like what I have too much. It's kind of like, let's make a deal. I'm not taking what's behind door number two. Just give me the fucking prize that I've already won. And I've won, make no mistake, the prize of living the life that I live. I love this life. But if there's one thing I could change, it would be understanding and knowing that I should have made bold choices earlier. Because now that I do that, now that I've been on my own for as long as I have, I realized I am rewarded for that. Just as I said, make bold choices and the universe will reward you for them. When I make the boldest choices, I tend to get the greatest rewards. So in a very tangible example of this, I loved my time at college radio and I loved what I did there. I never went and did TV because I wanted to make like sketch comedy. I desperately wanted to make that more than anything. And I just never fucking went over and did that. And I don't know why. I didn't have a good reason. I had the time. I had the writing chops. I was already writing on the internet. I've been writing on the internet since 2000. I was already on the radio. Like, what was stopping me? I don't fucking get it. And so I just never did it. And I've always looked back on that with mild regret. Like, what if I had gotten better video chops in my life? I think my life would be easier. Or better or richer or I don't know. But so that's one thing I would change. Make bolder choices earlier. So thanks, Alan. Really looking forward to seeing you. Number 10, final question. This one comes from Ben Roy. He of the Growlix. He of Those Who Can't. He of the band Spells. He of just amazing stand-up comedy. He was episode 251. We did that during quarantine. Actually, so was Alan in episode 254. That's interesting. Some of these were quarantine episodes. Tom Bryan was one. I've got a bunch coming up in the mailbag on Friday that were one. But anyway, here's Ben Roy's question. On your deathbed, which, okay, here we go. What do you think you will miss most about your life? And he said, be earnest. So I don't have the earnestness horn on me. That's probably copyrighted by the Growlix. But if I'm being earnest about it, what do I miss most from my life on the deathbed? And I think my answer is the anticipation. Because at that point, it's over. We're done. We don't know what lies beyond. Anyone who tells you they know what lies beyond is trying to sell you something. But none of us can be 100% sure. We're all hopeful for what we hope is in the great beyond, but we don't know. What I do know about life is that the possibilities are still pretty much endless. I say that as someone who had two surgeries this year, whose quality of life has improved greatly from that, and whose outlook has become much better. And I can tell you, I enjoy prepping for a party or pre-gaming more than I generally enjoy the party or going out itself. I love the anticipation of it. I love thinking about the possibilities. I love the idea of looking ahead, even when I don't know what's coming. That shit excites me. And the fact that I'm a professional creative, I think the love of anticipation has served me really well. Because it's like, I don't know what's next. And that's thrilling. That's genuinely thrilling. I never know what my wife is going to say next. That's why she's my favorite person. I wrote this during that 50-song countdown I did. Which, by the way, I was going through a huge bummer when that thing wrapped. Because that was so fun to write. And I got such nice words from people. But I was looking forward to how the next essay would be received. I was looking forward to writing the next essay. On this show, I look forward to the next episode I'm going to do. I look forward to my next creative work project. I don't know what any of these things are, but I'm optimistic in knowing that they are coming, or I'm hopeful that they're coming. And it's the hope, the anticipation, and the optimism that just thrills me in life. I like having shit to look forward to, which is why Kristen and I try to plan outings, we try to plan trips, we try and come up with cool shit to do that's down the road. Because that's life, man. Like, as much as I'm good at being in the moment, knowing that, you know what, there's cool shit just around the corner. And that means the world to me. So on my deathbed, knowing that that's over, I think that's what I'll miss most about life. I hope that on my deathbed, wherever I am looking back and I feel a sense of gratitude, because that's what I feel right now. If my life were to end today or tomorrow, I wouldn't have any real regrets about my life. I love my life. I love the way it turned out. I love that I've gotten to do this show for 10 years, which is longer than I've done anything professionally or creatively. And I love that it continues. I have interviews scheduled coming up. I have things that I'm working on coming up in the future. And I'm like, that's cool. That is awesome. And the idea of that going away, I think that's what I'll miss most, man. So, shit, I ran into you on the street the other day. I was out just looking at secondhand stores with my pals, spotted you out there. And I'm like, shit, man, I ran into Ben Roy, one of my favorite artists. I love his work in Spells. I love the Growlix Saves the World. And I fucking love that I bumped into him in this city that I love. So that's what I'm going to leave you with, Denver. I love this show. I love that I get to create this show for you. And I love that sometimes you'll tell me that you appreciate it, that you love it, that you listen to it, that you read some bullshit that I wrote. I mean, what a gift. Like, what a way to connect. And it's like I said at the end of that 50-song countdown series. I could just do this shit on my own. Like, literally, I could just talk into a microphone and keep it for myself. But by putting ourselves out there, all we're doing is we're establishing a bridge, perhaps, where one did not exist before. And if this show is about anything, it's about building empathy in the world. The more we can understand each other, the less scary it is, the more connected we all are, and hopefully, the fucking better we are. Anyone who seeks to divide us, anyone who seeks to pit you against your fellow human is bullshit, and fuck them. This show is about bringing people together. So, Denver and beyond, I adore you. Thank you for being a part of my life for 10 years or 30 minutes or 2 minutes or however long you've listened to this show. However long it is, it means the world to me. So, I will see you back here next week for my very special guest. That's a great chat with Kathy Sabin. That one's coming up. That's how we're going to continue to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. The mailbag blog post goes up 2 days after this one. So I'll be around. Hit me up on the socials. It's J-O-A-T pod. The website is johnofalltrades.us. I'm on podcatchers everywhere, and I'm out and about here in the city of Denver. So wherever you are, I hope you are taking care of yourselves. I hope you are taking care of each other. I hope you are finding joy, success, and fulfillment in whatever you do. And until I hear you again, say goodnight, Gracie. Thank you for 10 years.
That's good, Johnny.